Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Raven's Real Spill. This is your girl, Raven, the serial poet, coming to bring to y'all another terror tale on this awesome Thursday. I don't know about y'all, it has been freaking spectacular. I have no complaints, but I hope that y'all day is going just as amazing. So, I'm not going to take up too much time. I don't believe in over talking for no reason. So, if you want to call in, the number is 914-205-5813. That is 914-205-5813. We're going to get into this spine tingling and hair raising terror test.
When I was around 15, I had started babysitting a family with three kids, two boys, one girl. Their mom knew me as the oldest, was friends with my little brother, and asked my mom if I could help out just because she had started taking on more shifts and her husband was doing the same. They lived right next to my high school and paid well, so I agreed despite not really having that much experience. Pretty quickly I realized that it was going to be difficult. The kids were great, but I was nervous around them. The oldest was fine, just playing on his Xbox most of the time or doing homework, but the two youngest were a different story. The middle child, daughter, was completely obsessed with horror movies, and on more than one occasion I had to hide the knives from her since she wanted to reenact them, and the youngest son tried to set the Christmas tree on fire. I know what kids can be like since I have a lot of younger and older cousins, but these ones drove me insane, and I would constantly worry about them hurting themselves or each other. If they played up, I would threaten to call their mom, which normally would work. It was after a few months that I realized if I had mentioned their dad, that's when they would really just behave and do what I asked, so that's what I started doing. Now, I never actually met the dad. I just knew that the guy was really tall and big and built, but was always described to me as still being really nice, so I never thought about it. On this occasion, I had said to the youngest boy that I would call his dad if he didn't stop behaving, which resulted in a huge tantrum, so I ended up calling him and explaining. Luckily for me, the dad was getting off of work early, so he said that he would get home as quick as he could and apologize for the kid's behavior. When I had explained this, the kid was sobbing and ended up locking himself in his room. That day, the dad got home, and they weren't joking when they said he was tall. I'm only 5'3 and was 15. When I saw him having to crouch a little to get through the door because of his size, I remember thinking, no wonder the kids won't misbehave when he's there. I said hi and apologized for the work call, which he had brushed off and said that it needed to be done and not to worry. We were both sat on the couch. I can't really remember why, but I think we were talking about what days they needed me for. Now at this stage, the two youngest had went outside to play while I was in with the oldest, as I had just been tidying a little from dinner. I was pretty weirded out because his oldest started to get pretty antsy when asked to go to the shop, kept making excuses to his dad, so I just offered to go. I could see the dad visibly frustrated and just wanted to defuse the situation. Now, I would like to point out that everything seemed normal at this point, but I remember feeling really intimidated by the dad. I only met him this one time and spoke for no more than 20 minutes. It turns out that the oldest had said to his mom that he didn't want me left alone with his dad, as he had apparently been watching me a little too closely during our short encounter. The parents had asked me to babysit later on that week, which I had agreed to, however, in the space of a few days, that quickly changed. I got a text from the mom apologizing for the last-minute arrangements, but saying I couldn't babysit. I was a little agitated since I had changed plans, but wasn't too bothered and just said it was fine, and just let me know when she needs me. She had asked me to come around to get my pay for the last 2 weeks, and I decided to just nip around before going home. As soon as I was in the house, I could tell something was off, but not wanting to pry, I just went in to say hi, talked about books for a little bit, and left. It wasn't until the next week, I think, or the week after, where everything kicked off. I came home to my mom being upset and angry, pacing the living room while my stepdad was trying to calm her down. I immediately went to her, asking what was wrong, feeling a little worried. Instantly, she just threw her arms around me and started crying and holding me. I had meant to be babysitting, but again, got canceled on, so I was home earlier than what I said I was originally. Pulling away confused, I asked her what was wrong again. Turns out my mom had been trying to get a hold of me, but my phone had died. I had went to babysit and nobody was home, so I just decided to head back on the bus, but wasn't able to let my mom know. She sits me down and starts trying to ask me questions about the dad and my time babysitting. Confused, I had mentioned that I had only met him once and only really spoke to him on the phone a handful of times when the kids were acting up. Nodding, my mom started pressing and asked if anything else had happened and kept questioning me, saying I could tell her anything. I just looked at her confused and told her that nothing had happened and asked what this was all about. I always remember her taking a deep breath and saying, "Oh, thank God," before letting me know what happened. Now, as I said, the details are vague because this was on the news. It turns out, the guy had killed someone while working and had been taken in by the police. During the interrogation, it turns out that he admitted to beating his wife and there were speculations of assaults. There was also mention that one of his types were petite girls that had dark hair, pale, which happened to match my description at the time, and my mom was terrified in case something had happened. I'm turning 23 this year, and this still gives me shivers. I was going to throw up and had a sinking feeling in my stomach. My mom held me close crying because she had been worried sick all day and scared in case something had happened. Needless to say, I stopped babysitting for that family right then and there. I felt so awful for the wife, as she was honestly one of the nicest women I'd ever met. About a week later, I got a text from her, and as it turns out, I had left some books, so I said that I would come over and get them. When I saw her, my heart sank. She had obviously not slept and was putting on a brave face for the kids who weren't sure what was going on. We ended up sitting in the kitchen and I gave her a hug, just trying to comfort her. I had mentioned that if she needed help with the kids, since he was gone, I would try and help, but she immediately refuses. As it turned out, people had started attacking the house. She gave me my stuff, paid for the wages with a little more added, I had completely forgot, and said she appreciated it, but it would be better off if I just took a step back from the family, as she didn't want me getting hurt for being associated with them. To this day, I still think about them, and it still scares me after thinking about what could have happened. I still talk to the younger kids who are a lot older and even help tutor her younger girl. I helped the oldest when he started high school because I noticed the kids bullying him for what his dad had done, which was awful, considering it wasn't the fault of the family. Hey friends, thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe and click that notification bell to be alerted of all future narrations. If you got a story, be sure to submit them to my subreddit, r/letsreadofficial, and give and receive feedback from the community, and maybe even hear your story featured on the next video. Secret Santa is a game that usually gets played in a classroom or, in my case, an office. We always look forward to Secret Santa, as we had an almost family-like community here where we were all encouraged to spend as much time as possible together. The tidbits of gossip were always playful and fun. This was not one of those times. This time around, I was the unfortunate soul who was gifted upon by the weird IT guy. Let's call him Squid. Squid was a guy with no social skills whatsoever, however, at the same time, an ingenious worker in his craft, or so they told me. A little background real quick. I'm a secret collector of these weird big-headed toys called Funko Pops. Not just any particular type either, but specifically Game of Thrones types. I had them all. However, there was this one character that I could never find, and that was a specific version of Tyrion. The one where he's in the battle armor with a scar across his face. You know, like in Season 2's Blackwater episode. Point is, not everyone gets the whole collection thing, and Funkos are, well, different than what everyone else was expecting. Nobody at work knew, and I intended to keep it that way. On my way home, between the time of assigning the Secret Santas and the day we exchanged, I ran into Squid at a hobby store. It looked like he was expecting to see me there. Or maybe that was just because he was weird and always looked that way. Either way, I have no clue. I didn't expect to see him there and tried to turn and leave. Me being an idiot, I looked back as I cleared the door and accidentally made direct eye contact with him. He got really nervous and looked down at the ground. I wasn't sure what to do, so instead I just left. I would talk to him next time I saw him and make up an excuse. I wouldn't bring this up, but the thing is, it plays a factor in the day we exchanged. Turns out he got me exactly the Funko doll I was looking for. My boy Tyrion with his battle scar, specifically the one I never told anyone at work I wanted. How he knew just made those bells in my head explode. Everyone had a good laugh and Squid looked so nervous, almost pale, when he gave it to me. When I asked him how he knew, he said it was just a guess, seeing as we ran into each other at the store by chance. When I got home, I put the doll in the corner of the room and never took it out of the bag. It just seemed so creepy to me that he knew to get me specifically that one doll. I couldn't even add it to the collection. I almost threw it away, but instead I just forgot about it for the next couple of weeks. Squid continued to ask me about it, specifically what I thought about it and if I set it up yet. I kept telling him I didn't, and he just kept getting more annoyed about it. He's been watching me more and more these days. I was thinking about complaining to HR, but everyone knew that Squid was like this homeschooled weirdo. Uncomfortable, but accepted regardless, as per the nature of the place we worked. So one day he asked me, and I decided to just lie and say yes. I stood the thing up in my TV room. Poor Squid looked beyond skeptical, and beyond that, even more annoyed, like he could just see through it. Turns out, Squid can tell when I lie. Who knows? Either way, it was getting unbearable. So I get home and the first thing I do is take it out of the bag and throw it away. As I do, I notice the factory seal on the box is torn open. Well, sort of. That wouldn't bother me so much, but it had masking tape over it as if to try to hide the fact. Big deal. Maybe someone got caught trying to take it out of the box and they just refurbished it. I don't know. Either way, I took it out of the box to look at it closely. Part of me wanted to know if the creep slipped a note inside, but there was nothing but the usual stuff. I noticed two things out of the gate. One was that the doll was heavier than usual. Like I said earlier, I've been collecting these things for quite some time, so I should know. The other was that the head had a crack in it. I take a closer look and notice that the crack actually wraps around the entire head. I prod at it for a second and notice that it's actually a seam from when it was split open. The head came apart very easily, and as it did, the small thing fell out of it. It looked like a plug or something, but then I realized the plug had a small glass over the receiving part. I take a closer look and see this tiny red light. Then it hits me. This is a camera. Some kind of DIY thing, like it was homemade. As I make it to throw it across the room, the light shuts off. Squid realized I found him out. I wrapped it in three plastic bags and put it into a box. The thought of having it in my house made my stomach turn, but I needed to show it to HR. When I showed up to work the next day, Squid was gone. Turns out he left a last-second call saying that he was quitting, effective immediately. Turns out he wiped his entire hard drive before he took off sometime the prior night. The word got out that Squid was trying to spy on me, and everyone was pretty cool about it, mostly on account of them saying things like, "I knew it." I mean, let's face it, we all did. So here's the part that really messes with me. It turns out that the main reason Squid was able to learn so much about me was the fact that I was foolish enough to leave my Google account logged into the work computer. From there, it was easy enough task for Squid to break into my account and learn all my personal information. Think about it. My entire phone was linked to Google. That thing has me on GPS, granting him the ability to stalk and keep track of me just two rooms away. No wonder he found out about the freaking doll. He had almost everything, but bad for him, I didn't own a webcam or anything like that for him to hack. He just needed to see me at night when I was private and vulnerable. I deleted all my accounts, changed my numbers, got rid of everything that gave him access to my personal information. I changed bank accounts, cut my credit and debit cards, completely uplifted my digital footprint. It just scares me because I just don't know how much information is out there about me, how far it goes. In the end, the police caught him and he was brought up on stalker charges of some sort. He pled guilty to infiltrating my life. He told them he wanted to learn the layout of my house. Do I really need to spell it out for you any further? Look, judge me if you want. But please, for the love of God, be careful when you share your personal information, especially when it comes to work computers. You just don't know who is watching. When I was 21, I lived with my two friends, Bruce and Ollie. We lived in a small house in a nice family-friendly neighborhood in the suburbs of our major city. Ollie owned the house and occupied the master bedroom on the main floor, and Bruce had the other bedroom on the main floor. My bedroom was on the mostly finished basement, which was great because I had a ton of privacy and a lot of open space. There was a side door that could be accessed from the basement so I could come and go as I pleased without bothering the other roommates. We were all pretty close, but it was nice to feel like I had my own living space, even though there were three of us in the house. At the time, Bruce and I were huge fans of Halloween and the fall season in general. But being adults and having full-time jobs, it wasn't really ideal for us to go out and attend Halloween parties like a lot of the other people we knew. Also, Halloween fell on a Tuesday this year, so instead we decided to just watch some horror movies in my basement bedroom and just hang out and relax. After we watched a couple of movies, we started to get a little bored. It was about 11 p.m. and the trick-or-treaters were home, and most people were in for the night. Knowing we had to work in the a.m., we decided it would be a good idea for us to go on a quick walk and call it a night. There is something about the air on Halloween night. It's like when you go on a vacation to Florida, and the night breeze just feels and smells different. That's how it is on Halloween. It's nostalgic and can almost give you a euphoric feeling. Anyway, as we started to walk in the quiet and somewhat desolate neighborhood, we approached the park. Now we walk through this park all the time during the day, probably at least 50 times at this point. It was a little park right in the middle of the neighborhood. The park had a main entrance from one of the busier streets and a back entrance from the street we lived on. The back entrance was covered with a lot of trees and a very small wooded area. About 30 yards from the entrance, there were three baseball fields, a pavilion, and a basketball court. We walked into the back entrance where all the trees were, and it was nearly pitch black, but there was a low orange hue from the streetlight barely making its way through the trees. As we walked through the wooded area, we both stopped abruptly. We thought we saw a man standing at the end of the path. The figure was completely still, and it was so dark we couldn't be sure what it was. I called out, "Hey!" to the figure, but no response. I suggested we should turn around, but Bruce said we should check it out, which was unlike him because I was usually the braver of us two. As we got closer, it was clear it was a man standing there. The man was completely still and had both of his hands in his front hoodie pocket. His head was down facing the ground. Trying not to freak out, we decided to slowly back up and make our way to the street and our house without further confrontation. Before we even moved, we heard a noise next to us coming from both sides. Trying to focus our eyes in the darkness, we saw two more figures moving towards us in the woods. Unlike the other guy just standing there, these people were approaching us. I wish I could explain the feeling I felt inside me during this point. It's like the sinking pit in your stomach when a cop pulls up behind you with his lights on, but 100 times worse. Fight or flight kicked in, and we turned and sprinted full speed out of that park and onto our street, never looking back to see if they were following us. We ran right to our house and locked the doors behind us. While sitting in the basement, we had all the lights off and we were trying to look out the basement windows to see if we could see if anyone followed us or possibly saw the house we went into. We were so scared we didn't know what to do. Were we in real danger? Was it someone just playing a prank? After about half an hour or so, we decided that they most likely didn't follow us and it was probably okay to go to sleep, especially considering we both had work in the morning. At about 2:30 in the morning, Bruce woke me up. He said he thought he heard something outside his bedroom window. I went to his room and looked out the window and I could see a pumpkin laying in our backyard. This was concerning because we didn't have any pumpkins outside our house. We didn't set any up for decorations or anything like that. For the second time tonight, we were terrified and decided to go into the living room. While in the living room, we made sure we had the house lights off and began looking out the front windows. Within the first minute of looking, there they were, three men standing in the middle of the road just staring at our house. We thought about calling the police, but what were we going to tell them? There are three guys not standing on our property who may or may not have thrown a pumpkin in our backyard. We just sat in the living room for about 10 minutes trying to think of something, anything we could do. We made sure the front door was locked and grabbed a baseball bat and I think a kitchen knife. We looked out the window again and the three men were gone. Nothing but the illumination from the streetlights. For the rest of the night, we stayed in the living room watching SportsCenter until we eventually dozed off. Morning finally came. As we got ready for work, we just agreed it was probably just a Halloween prank and we should move on and forget about it. However, when I got to my car, there was a note on my windshield that said, "Happy Halloween," with a smiling face sticker on it. What I read next gave me the same feeling I had just had a few hours before when I thought we were in real danger. At the bottom on the paper it said, "P.S. Good thing you lock your doors." What would these people have done if the doors were unlocked? Bruce and I both decided to call in from work and stay home that day. Nothing else of note happened regarding this incident, but it's just a reminder that it doesn't matter how quiet and nice a neighborhood you think you live in. On Halloween, anything can happen. If you're like me, staying home alone every day in the summer can become a drag. I've always been someone who needs to stay busy all the time. I don't like being alone and like to always be active. Last year, after finishing my freshman year of college, I decided to take a summer job to make some extra cash. I worked for a landscaping company, but the pay was under the table. I won't put the name of the company out there, but the owner seemed eager to get me on immediately, so I figured perhaps I could become a full-time employee later in the summer. For the time being, he agreed to pay me based on different jobs we did. For the first few weeks, it was great. I was getting super tan and jacked from all the lifting. The first 3 weeks, he paid me, and I was getting paid quite well. But by the time we got to the fourth week is when things started to get weird. He usually paid me on Friday, but didn't pay me this week. When I brought it up to him, he just smiled and said that he was going to start paying me every 2 weeks. I was kind of annoyed, but basically said whatever because I figured I would have a fat paycheck in another week. Well, fast forward another week and I don't get paid. Now I'm upset. I've been doing hard work for 2 weeks and not getting paid. I called my boss and asked what the deal was. He claimed he just forgot and was sorry. I shrugged it off and said, whatever, it was fine. We agreed to meet on Saturday for the payment. I went to the spot he told me to meet him at, and he handed me an envelope. I took it and told him I'd see him on Monday. When I opened the envelope, it was just pay for 1 week. I called him furious, but he insisted that he paid me for the previous week. I flipped out over it and told him I didn't want to continue working, especially under the table, and that it was making me uncomfortable. He called and begged me to come back for a huge job we had next week and that he would pay me double. I agreed, thinking this would likely be my last job and I could take the cash and move on. Monday comes and I meet him at this huge house surrounded by nothing but open land. We started laying mulch and setting up the front yard. Before I knew it, I was alone. I didn't see him anywhere. I got a little angry that I was now by myself doing all this work. After an hour or so, I finally see him emerge from the back of the house. He looked frustrated and almost a little nervous. He came up to me and in a very soft voice, he said, "Can you go see if you can get the water turned on in the basement? I tried and I couldn't get it. Please?" It was a weird request. I honestly wanted to get out of the heat for a second, so I accepted. Once in the basement, I found the water hooked up in a matter of seconds, but what I noticed right away was that the water was already on. I turned around quickly, and that's when I saw my boss and a skinny woman standing behind me. He had his hands out facing me, and she had one hand behind her back, almost as if though she was concealing something. Before I could speak, he said, "You shouldn't have come down here. And just so you know, I'm sorry." Back on my feet, I kicked him in his ankle and ran right through the skinny woman. I got to my car and drove away and called the police. The worst part about all of this was that there was literally nothing they could do because I was technically working under the table. And there was no records of this man's company, even though I had seen one of his trucks with a logo on it. Fortunately for me, this guy didn't know where I lived. It almost seemed like the company was a scam from the start, but I'm not sure what his intentions with me ever were. I know there is a lot I could have done differently, but this is easily the weirdest experience of my entire life. Was this psycho really going to try to hurt me over a week or so of pay? Either way, I'm glad I never ran into that landscaping psychopath again. My name is Mike, and I'm here to share a story involving a very dangerous and scary situation I went through just the other night on my way to my girl's house. I'm not doing this to cause fear in other members of the sub. I only want to make you all aware of the dangers of driving alone at night, especially when no one else is around. Like I said at the time I had this encounter, I was on the road to my girlfriend's place about 20 miles from mine. Most of the area I had to drive through is heavily developed. However, there's a stretch of roughly 5 miles that is probably just as rough as it was when people settled in the area just after the Civil War. It doesn't really matter how long it's been this way. I'm only attempting to convey the idea that it's completely undeveloped to you. Regardless of the history of that road, there are no business or houses along that stretch of road, mainly just open fields and woods. Not to mention, at the time of night when I usually am going back and forth on the highway, there are little, if any, cars on that particular stretch. It's usually a quiet and enjoyable part to drive on, and the entire time I've traveled on it, which has to have been hundreds, I never imagined that anything scary or violent could happen to me. Man, was I wrong. That night I'd clocked out just after midnight and sent my girl a quick text to let her know I was on my way. The plan was to spend the night at her place, so after a stop to get gas, I hit the road. That late in the evening, I didn't see many cars going my direction, so I floored it in hopes to get to her house fast. However, just in a matter of minutes, I came up behind two cars driving next to each other at a slow speed. I'm not sure what they were doing, and I didn't care. I just wanted one of them to get out of my way so I could continue on my journey. In my haste, I honked at the car ahead of me in the passing lane. I'm not an idiot. I didn't lean on it. I just gave them a sort of beep to announce my presence. To my relief, the car sped up and moved over in front of the other car to allow me to pass. I was thankful to them for doing this, so I gave them a little kind wave. You know, the kind you give to a passing neighbor. Eager to get to my destination, I floored the gas again, but before I could even get 20 feet down the road, the car behind me turned on his brights and blinded me. This made me mad, but I flipped up my rearview mirror and tried to ignore it. If being blinded wasn't bad enough, the driver crossed the line to dangerous. Out of nowhere, I was rammed in the rear and almost lost control of my car. I realized then that I was in big trouble. There didn't seem to be any way to get out of this other than to outrun them, so I put the pedal all the way to the floor and prayed I could get away. Before I could gain enough speed, I was rammed again, this time much harder. My head was thrusted forward and back by the collision. The pain came almost immediately. Thankfully, I was able to pull away and leave the other car behind, but I could still see them about 60 yards in the distance trying to catch me. This was the moment I was saved. Most people wouldn't look forward to being caught speeding, but in the circumstances, I was relieved. I just lost sight of the car in my mirror when everything was lit up with blue and red colors. Overjoyed, I quickly pulled my car over and got out to greet the cop. He was a little nervous when I jumped out of the car, but soon enough I was able to get him to understand what I was doing. When he shined his flashlight on the back of my car, we would see the damage, and it was bad. Of course, both of my taillights were busted and the rear clip was crumpled up like an accordion. I told him what had just happened, and he had me follow him up the road to file a more in-depth report. He told me he'd do his best, but the odds that they'd find the driver were low, and that's what I figured when I made the report. I was just relieved to be alive and out of danger. My neck was still hurting, so my next stop was the emergency room. I called my girl from the waiting room, and she almost had a heart attack when I told her what had happened. She soon met me there, and she made me let her follow me on the drive to her house. Like I expected, I had whiplash. All they could do was give me some prescriptions and tell me to come back if the pain got worse. Despite the sore neck, by the time I finally made it back to her house, I fell asleep instantly. Since then, I've had my girlfriend stay over at my place, and as far as I know, the cops haven't caught the driver. Like I said, I'm not telling you guys this story to scare you. I'm sharing it to remind you to be careful on the road at night and always be mindful of the way you treat other drivers. Just because you don't intend to make them angry doesn't mean they won't get mad. For a little context, I am currently a senior in college and live off campus with my two best friends. This time of year, particularly around Thanksgiving, my friends try to help me stay busy as it is typically a difficult time for me. My mother left our family the week of Thanksgiving when I was 8 years old, and my dad passed away 5 years ago on November 22nd. So as I said, it's a pretty easy time of year to get myself down in the dumps if I don't stay active. Every year for the last 3 or 4 years, I've gone to one of my friends' houses to celebrate Thanksgiving with their families. But this past year, I decided I wanted to just stay home and have a mellow long weekend. I figured I could catch up on work as well as my schoolwork, which was pretty far behind. My roommates and I didn't live particularly close to the university. We lived in a suburb about 15 to 20 minutes outside of the school. This was nice because we didn't ever have to host any parties. We could just attend them near campus and head back home afterwards. Anyways, there was one house on our street that didn't quite match the others. It wasn't that the house was worse than the others, but it had no landscaping and desperately needed a fresh coat of paint. My roommates and I knew the owner as he introduced himself when we moved in a few years back. His name is Jacob. He's about 5'6" and probably weighed 100 pounds soaking wet. Every time we've had an interaction with him, he was always very nice and polite. He even helped us fix our porch light when it broke last summer. He seems to be very cordial with everyone in the neighborhood and has helped numerous people with small handy jobs similar to the one I just mentioned. On the Wednesday night leading up to Thanksgiving, my two roommates went back to their families' houses in their hometowns. They both asked several times if I was 100% sure I wanted to spend Thanksgiving alone and that I'd be fine by myself. I honestly thought I would be and thought perhaps enough time had passed that I could just focus on other things and not dwell on the past. I stocked up on Mountain Dew so I could stay awake after my assignments to play some PlayStation. At about 9 or 10 p.m., I went up to my room to throw on some sweatpants and grabbed a blanket for my bed. I glanced out my window and saw Jacob sitting on his front porch with the two porch lights on. I didn't think anything of it and went downstairs into the kitchen and made a peanut butter and fluff sandwich. I would say I was in the kitchen for probably about 5 minutes or so, finishing eating and doing a few dishes. When I finally sat down to play some games, I thought I heard something hit the front bay window, so I went to take a look. At first, I didn't see anything, but then noticed that Jacob had now turned the porch lights off and was standing on his front lawn, staring at the house with his head tilted like he was looking towards the windows upstairs. A little creeped out, I tried calling one of my friends who knew I was still in town to see if she wanted to meet up or stop over to hang out for a little bit. She didn't answer, so I sat on the couch for a couple of moments trying to figure out what to do. He was still standing there staring and seemingly moving a few feet closer to our property each time I looked. I wasn't sure what to do. I couldn't call the cops. He hadn't done anything except freak me out a little, and to this point, he hadn't even stepped on my property. After another few minutes, I looked out the window again and saw Jacob now on our lawn looking at the corner of the house. At least that's what it looked like he was staring at. At this point, I wasn't sure what his intentions were, and I didn't want to find out. Perhaps I was blowing this out of proportion, but I was legitimately scared. I grabbed my keys and phone and a few other items, thinking I would just drive to campus. Maybe the library was still open, even though we were off for the holiday. I kept all the lights on so I didn't seem like I was leaving and decided I was going to sneak out the back door. As I quietly sneaked through the yard, I turned the corner to quickly get to my car, and there was Jacob, standing in our driveway. I asked him what he was doing in the driveway, and he put his finger over his mouth to make a shh noise. I slapped him as hard as I could and made a run for it past my car. My instincts and adrenaline told me to just run until I found someone or someplace else. As I got about a block or two down the road, I saw a bunch of cop cars pull up towards the area of my house. Confused, I began to go back towards my house, thinking perhaps another neighbor saw Jacob stalking outside of my house and called the police. As I approached the house, one of the officers asked my name and if this was my residence. I confirmed the information, and what I heard next is still the most horrifying and disturbing information I had ever received. The officer stated that Jacob reported that he was on his porch when he saw me from across the street. He saw me walk out of my upstairs bedroom, and as I walked away out of the room, he saw a man come out of my closet. Apparently that was why Jacob was looking into my room when I saw him the first time, and also why he was looking at the corner of the house. He was following the intruder who was now walking into my roommate's room. When I last saw him outside my house before I slapped him and ran in terror, Jacob stated that the random guy in my house had made it to the downstairs. Jacob was trying not to make any noise as not to alert the person inside, fearful he could be violent or dangerous. As soon as he saw the man in the house, Jacob called the authorities and did his best to try and defuse the situation and not bring any alarm to myself or the intruder. The person inside the house was arrested and taken away. He didn't have anything on him other than a knife, so it is unclear if he was attempting to rob the home or was planning something more sinister. Either way, I couldn't express to Jacob how much gratitude I had for what he did. He even tried apologizing for how he handled the situation, stating that there were probably things he could have done differently to make sure I was safe and aware of the situation. Unfortunately, this experience adds another mental scar to this time of year that will take a long time to get over. But one thing I can be sure of is that I will never spend a Thanksgiving holiday alone again.
It was around 2002, and I had just married my wife, and we had just had our first baby. In the middle of the night, my wife sat up to go check on the baby, and when she put her feet onto the floor next to the bed, she felt a body. She reached down and lifted an arm. She thought it was me on the floor at first, but then she reached over and felt that I was still lying next to her. She screamed. I woke up and turned on the light. There was a man passed out on the floor. I called the police and they took him away. The police think that he broke into our house and passed out next to our bed. The disturbing thing, he was holding a hammer.
My first experience with sleep paralysis wasn't as eventful as others. I know some people have talked about seeing things in their room, something on their chest, or even being touched, but that didn't happen to me. Mine was fairly mild. I was about 14 or 15 years old and had fallen asleep in my room watching something on television, most likely Ghost Hunters. Some hours later, I woke up, but I didn't wake up. I'm sure anyone who's dealt with SP before knows what I mean. I could feel the blanket over me, hear the low voices on the TV, and tell I was in a very uncomfortable position. When I tried to move, I couldn't. My heart immediately started racing. In my young brain, I convinced myself I had managed to somehow paralyze myself. Completely irrational, I know, but I was fairly young. I laid there for most likely only a minute or so before finally breaking out of it and waking up completely. For some reason, I wasn't as scared as I thought I should have been. I mean, not being able to move or break from restraints is one of my biggest fears, but for whatever reason, it didn't really get to me. I started Googling not being able to move while awake, and that's when I learned what SP was. And that was it for a few years. I didn't have a second episode until I was in my 20s and living with my wife in an apartment in Greensboro. We moved there after graduating to go to college. I ended up dropping out, but that's beside the point. She was working as a babysitter, and I was working third shift at a Harris Teeter. I had the following night off, so I was at home working on stuff for my YouTube channel. Around 3 p.m. or so, I was feeling a little drained, so I decided on taking a nap until she got home around 5:45 or 6 p.m. I left my little closet studio and went to lay down in bed. Real quick, I need to explain the layout a bit. We had three large windows on one side of our bedroom. The side I slept on faced these windows, and the bed itself was only a few feet from them. Behind me was the rest of the bedroom and a small hallway leading into our bathroom. Now, I'd fallen asleep rather quickly, but I am a light sleeper, so when I woke up to the sound of footsteps behind me, I assumed it was my wife getting home from work. I can't really explain how I heard these footsteps because the bedroom was all carpet, but somehow I could hear the footsteps pressing down on it. I went to turn around and greet her, but I couldn't move. Great, I thought, this shit again. No worries. She'll come over and wake me up, and all will be okay in the world. That didn't happen. The footsteps just continued, but never seemed to get any closer. They were always just near the edge of the bed. This went on for what felt like an hour, but eventually my eyes opened, and I quickly rolled over to see what was behind me. There was nothing there. Hoping my wife had just made her way out of the room, I headed out and went to the living room, but I was alone in the house. As a matter of fact, when I eventually checked my phone, my wife had texted me saying she was going to be late getting home. So, that would mean she hadn't come home and then left. And that's what I heard. She was never there. I never had another experience quite like that one, but I have had a few more sleep paralysis episodes. None have ever come close to that experience, however. 99% of the time, it's just the feeling of something in the room with me.
Back around 2010 and 2011, when websites like Chat Roulette were popular, my friends and I would sometimes mess around with people on our webcam. The website usually peaked on weekend nights, and when we were like 14, we didn't really do much on weekend nights. So I had my friend Peter over, and we hopped on Chat Roulette. It was just my mom home, so we went upstairs with the laptop where we could be as loud as we wanted. We acted like two idiotic 14-year-olds, basically being mean and rude to anyone we saw. So basically on Chat Roulette, you'd press go, and it would match you with someone else, anyone else using their webcam. Some girl who appeared to be a couple years older than us popped up. Her camera quality wasn't the best, and she was sitting in a dark room with a blue light filling a decent amount of it. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty tiny details over what Peter and I said to her, but we acted like douchey, mean teenage boys, to be frank. Then Peter said, "Who is that behind you?" I suddenly looked beyond the girl to see what he was talking about. I didn't see anyone, so I caught on that he was joking. She seemed to know he was messing with her right away too, saying something along the lines of us being little dweebs. Peter insisted to the girl he was being serious, and I played along with it. The girl turned around, and like the two of us, she didn't see anyone behind her. All I could see behind her was the rest of the room, which appeared to be a mess, and her bed tucked in the corner of the room. Peter said there was someone hiding behind her bed. I looked at Peter, trying to hold in the laughter and make it seem like I was seeing what he was seeing too. Then I finally noticed someone in the background, by the back wall of the girl's room. He was coming out from behind the bed, seemingly trying to be inconspicuous. My smile disappeared as I then realized Peter wasn't joking around. I started telling her that someone was actually sneaking up behind her. Realistically, I assumed it was her brother or something messing with her, trying to scare her. So I said that. I said, "It looks like your brother is trying to scare you." She finally turned around, and her reaction was not what I was expecting at all. She screamed at the top of her lungs and jumped back out from her chair onto the desk, crawling backwards while frantically kicking her feet at the person approaching her. We could hear the sounds of books and other items falling from her desk as she kicked and screamed. Her webcam started to shake, as all we could see of her was her legs. The person in her room got an arm's reach of her, and now we could see a black mask over his face. He grabbed the girl and kept screaming, "Shut up," and her screams only got worse. Peter and I were silent now, simply staring, not knowing what to make of this. The man then looked into the webcam from behind his black mask for a second, and a few seconds later, the screen went dark, and we connected to another random person. Peter and I looked at each other. We closed out from the website and sat there to talk and take that in for a second. We agreed it was possible it could have been a prank, A lot of people on YouTube at the time played pranks on people on Chat Roulette to get some crazy reactions. But it looked real. Almost too real to be a performance. Well, a few days later, I got a text from Peter. It was a link. A link to a news article about a teenage girl who had been murdered while home alone a few days back. We told our parents because we wanted to be able to give a description of what happened to the police. So our parents coordinated a time for us to sit down with the two investigators to explain everything we saw. We said we were on Chat Roulette with a blonde girl who looked either 16 or 17, and that some average-sized looking man wearing a black ski mask emerged from a back corner of her room and started to attack her on camera, but only for so long until he turned off the computer. We gave the best description we could. Whether they believed us or not, or whether the information helped or not, was something we honestly never found out.
When I was a kid, I had no curtains or blinds over my window in my room. There's a street lamp just outside my window, so anything that walks past my window would cast a shadow on my wall. Two nights in a row, I woke up and looked at the wall to see the shadow of a man. I didn't have enough courage to turn and look up at the window to see who it was. It was late at night, too. I knew it couldn't be my dad, because I could hear him snoring. The worst part is my bed was in front of the window with my head at the bottom of the window, so whoever it was behind me could probably see me. This is the scariest thing that's happened to me, because it's not something supernatural. There's a good chance there was a man just standing at my window in the middle of the night, watching me sleep.
When I was 12, I attended summer camp to learn how to ride horses. We were going to be away from our parents for 4 or 5 nights. I was really excited because I always wanted to learn how to ride a horse due to my love for animals, but I was also nervous about being away from my family and around strangers for that long. Most of it was amazing and everything I dreamed of. However, the one night labeled Sleep Under the Stars is an experience that I don't think I'll ever forget. That night we had to leave our bunks and go outside to sleep in tents. I hated tents, but everyone else was doing it, so I figured I'd play along. There were a lot of activities that took place before bed. We were to sit by the campfire, make s'mores, and tell stories. When it came time for bed, it was 4 of us to a tent, and I could already tell I wasn't going to get much sleep. I just couldn't get comfortable and was wishing it was morning. The other people in my tent seemed to pass out almost immediately, which left me to sit there and try to count sheep in the dark. There were a lot of tents in the small area due to the fact that everyone in the camp was sleeping outside for one night. I was starting to get a little drowsy when I heard what sounded like footsteps outside of the tent. I was right near the mesh window of the tent because I tended to get hot and was hoping the cool breeze would let me sleep. The footsteps then got louder, but I tried to ignore them, presuming it was a counselor or one of the camp leaders. But then I felt a presence right outside my tent. It was like someone was kneeling right outside the mesh window. I gathered the courage to look outside the window, and there was something outside. I didn't look long enough to see what it was, but something was there. It was silent at first, but then I heard whispering. Just mumbling and whispering for minutes and minutes without a break. I couldn't really make out the words because it was so soft, but I could definitely hear something. I thought I could hear the words, Savior, sacrifice, wept. I feel like I've heard the words wept a lot, but like I said, I couldn't really make it out. Every so often it would stop and I would peek my head out of my sleeping bag to check and see if someone was there. And the figure was always still there right outside the mesh window. On and off, I could hear the whispering and mumbling all night. I tried several times to kick or punch someone in my tent to wake them up, but it didn't work. Eventually, during one of the moments of silence, I must have dozed off. As scared as I was, I have no clue how I was able to fall asleep even ever so briefly. I checked the window again and nothing was there, but about 5 minutes later, I heard a loud shriek and a gust of wind. When I woke up the next morning, I asked everyone if they heard or experienced anything similar to what I did during the night. No one heard or saw anything other than me. I know I wasn't asleep, and I absolutely saw and heard those things that night. I don't want to say it wasn't human, because nothing gave me that idea, but what type of person would have knelt by our tent and mumbled under their breath the entire night? As scared as I was at the time, I'm glad I never had another experience like that again.
I had just moved into a tiny town that was literally in the middle of nowhere and had less than 100 people in the total population. I was about 7 at the time, and I had overheard my parents talking about a dog that kept barking all night that kept them up. I wanted to help them, so I went out looking for neighbors with dogs, just to ask them if they could maybe keep their dogs from barking all night. So this particular town had a bad track record of houses catching on fire, so there were a lot of old half-burned houses just sitting there. This particular incident happened with one of these ruined houses. As I'm walking, I hear someone call out to me, and I turn to see a very beautifully kept lawn in front of a nice white two-story house. There's a nice old couple sitting in lawn chairs out in front, and the woman is calling me over. I walk over to the fence. The woman asks me what I'm doing walking around here by myself. I tell them about the dog and ask if they know about it. The woman says that it's her dog and she'll try to keep the dog down, and then offered me a full-size Snickers, and I took it. Feeling like I accomplished my goal, I went home. At that time, I really wanted to eat the Snickers, but it had melted on my walk back home, so I put it in the freezer to chill. Then my friend comes over, and we head over to her house, and I forgot about the candy. Wondering how the ruined houses fit into this? Well, when I returned home from my friend's house, I tell my mom about the nice couple, and they would keep their dog quiet. I tell her where the house was, and she gets really confused. What do you mean? There isn't a house there. I would have shown the candy bar as evidence, but I had totally forgot about it. After some back and forth, we agree to go on a walk tomorrow in the daytime, so I can show her which house I mean. Next day, we walk down to where the house was, and there was no house. The well-kept lawn was just overgrown weeds, and the house was just nothing but a pile of rubble. Only the fence still remained. I ran home to show her the candy that I had just remembered about, and that was gone too. I still get chills when I pass by that vacant lot to this day, and right now, I'm 20 years old.
Charlie. Years ago, in my first year of college, I lived in a dorm, but if only I knew what was going to happen. I earned a scholarship to college for baseball, and all the players lived in one dorm. Being that I was a freshman, they roomed me with a senior so he could show me what right looks like. He was a pretty tough guy who no one would mess with, so I felt like I was in good hands. It was the winter, and by that time of the school year, I was pretty set in my ways and comfortable. I was invited to a house party that one of the sororities were throwing, so I went with a few friends. When we got there, it was like any other party. People were outside, and some were inside having fun. While inside, there was music playing along with people playing video games in one room, and it looked like a board game going on in the other. That was upstairs. After a while, I went upstairs to see why anyone would be playing a board game at a party. When I got to the room, I noticed that it was the most quiet room in the house, which was odd to me. When I walked in the room, there were four girls and a guy sitting at a table. I asked what was going on, and they said they were using the Ouija board. I thought it sounded interesting, so I joined. But I never really believed in that type of stuff. While we were messing with the board, they said that there was a girl in the room, but I think that one of the other people that were playing moved it, so I left. That's when unexplainable stuff would happen to me in my dorm. I'd hear laughing in our hallways at odd times of the night, knocks on the window, and I started to have bad dreams. I told my roommate, but he told me it was stress from our upcoming midterms. That went on for about 2 weeks. Then one night, everything changed for both of us. I remember it being a Thursday night when this happened. I was sleeping in the middle of the night, and all I heard was,
Charlie, wake up.
I remember making noises and being half asleep, but I acknowledged him. Then he said something that woke me up immediately.
Charlie, what the fuck is that in the corner?
I looked in the corner of the room and I swear there was a silhouette of a girl. I was so afraid that I jumped off the top bunk and I told my roommate to get up and run, but he was so petrified. He was under his covers quivering. Then she spoke.
Why do you seem so scared? All I wanted to do was
play with you.
I told him I'm out and we both ran out of our room. He was yelling as she's talking. After that, we were both so shaken that we never went back to that room. We called the police, but when they came, they never found any girl. I don't know if it was because of the house party, Ouija board game, or coincidence, but that was a moment that I'll never forget. To this day, I still hear odd noises throughout the night wherever I go. I'm a nurse, and I was driving home from work one night. The roads were deserted, and it was freezing that night. I don't live far from work, maybe a couple of miles. I'm driving down a residential street around the corner from my house, and I see a man laying face down in the street. Once again, I'm a nurse, so my first thought was, great, gotta help this guy. I was coming off of a long shift, and falls happen all the time. As I slowed down the car, I suddenly realized what an idiot move it was. I'm a 100-pound woman and I don't carry a weapon. I thought I should do something to help this guy, so I called 911 as I drove past him and slowed to a stop at the end of the block. While I was stopped at the light, I explained to the dispatcher that there was a man in the road who might need assistance. All of a sudden, I hear a loud bang, bang from the driver's side window. I screamed and I looked over. A man was pounding on my window and jiggling the handle of my locked door. I looked in the rearview mirror and saw that there was no man laying in the street anymore. Still on the phone with 911, I screamed, "I'm so scared," to the dispatcher and floored it through the red light. I quickly told him what had happened, and even though I was right by my house, he told me to keep driving. After a few minutes, I had calmed down and he told me to loop back around. I pulled over down the road from my house and I stayed in the car. I didn't see the man anywhere, so I got off the phone with the dispatcher, who told me he was sending a police car to cruise the area. As I gather up my things, I do a final scan of the area, and I see the man. He's walking with two other men. I hunched way down in my car until they were further down the road, then bolted into my house. I don't know if he had ill intent, but it freaks me the hell out that he wasn't alone. Just always, always lock your doors. This happened 2 years ago. My name is James, and my girlfriend at the time was Susie. Susie and I got into an argument about a girl. She was just texting me about the edibles. The girl just wanted to know who had edibles and the prices on them. I remember I used the bathroom, and after I came back to the living room, I saw Susie on my phone, and she looked angry. She started asking questions about the girl. You know, regular questions. Am I cheating on her? Is she pretty? The most disturbing one was, if she was right here, right now, would I kiss her or my girlfriend? That was the PG version of what she really asked. I told her she texted me about edibles, and besides that, the girl doesn't even like guys. But I don't think my girlfriend knew that. So we continued to argue for about 20 minutes. I started to say this is stupid, and I remember looking at the clock and it was 11 p.m. Since she was staying over that night, I told her we should just stop fighting and try to get some sleep or watch a movie. We agreed and turned on a movie. We were watching Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood. As we were watching the movie, I noticed she was on her phone typing fast and just really involved in her phone. Every time I leaned in a little closer to see what was going on, she would always move her phone away and just give me a cold shoulder. We continued watching the movie until I heard somebody at my door. I said, I wonder who that could be at this time. Again, I looked at the clock, and now it was 1 a.m. My mom was in her room asleep, but after she heard the doorbell, she woke up asking who that was. I told her I didn't know, but I was going to find out. So as I started going to the door, I heard whispering from my girlfriend, like she was on the phone or something. I didn't really pay attention to it, so I finally got to the door and I looked through the peephole. I was met with some tall dude wearing mostly all black. I talked to him through the door, and I asked him, what do you want? He replies with, I'm just here to drop off a package. Sorry, I'm late. And I was thinking, who delivers a package at 1 a.m? So I told him to leave, and he could come back some other time to deliver the package. He said no, in a deep, commanding voice. Just in that moment, my ex-girlfriend Susie comes walking towards me with a grin on her face. She says to me, so you're really not going to tell me who that girl was texting you? I explained that she wasn't anybody, and I didn't know her like that. And this is the wrong time to be asking me a question like that when there's somebody at the door I didn't know. Till this day, what she said still gives me the chills, just thinking about it. She said, the guy at the door, he's here to get rid of you. At first, I gave out a nervous laugh and said, that's not funny. She said, yeah, it is. Well, at least for me, it is. As this was going on, the guy at the door kept messing with the door handle, trying to get in. So I was leaning up against the door, preventing him to come in. As I looked behind me, Susie was gone. A few seconds later, she comes back with a knife and said, either he's going to get you or I will. I started flipping out and thinking, what am I going to do? I can't die right here. Just in that moment, I heard a commanding voice saying, back away from the door or we'll shoot. I thought to myself, what the fuck? So I swung open the door, and there was the police. One of the police officers told Susie to drop the knife because when I took my eyes off of her and I opened the door, she was right behind me, like literally right behind me. But the officer saying that must have scared her, and she dropped the knife immediately. Apparently, while all this was going on, my mom called the cops and explained the situation the best she could. She pretended to be asleep so she wouldn't cause attention to herself and could get help as fast as she could. The police arrested both of them and took them to the station. Apparently, the guy that was there was her cousin. And the whole time the movie was playing, she was texting him, telling him to come over and quote unquote, deal with me. I'm just happy that I'm still here today. My mom saved my life. I don't even want to imagine what they would have done with me. My name is Chris, and this happened to me in the late 1970s. I grew up in a poor neighborhood in Calgary, Alberta, and like most young kids, I had a number of friends from school and the neighborhood. I was 13 at the time, and this was right at the very beginning of the personal home computer revolution. You would hear about personal computers on the news all the time. However, no one actually owned a home computer. And it was almost like a story of science fiction to actually see one. One day, my friend started talking about this university professor who moved into one of our duplexes near our school. He was supposed to be a really cool guy who had all kinds of gadgets in his apartments, and he actually owned a personal computer. One afternoon, when walking home from school, I was crossing through a park near the professor's house. From the second floor balcony of the duplex, I saw some of my friends and they waved to me to come over, so I did. The teacher lived on the second floor of a two-story duplex and looked the part of a teacher with shaggy hair, beard, and glasses. At the time, I was too young and naive to see the warning signs about this guy. He lived alone in a three-bedroom duplex apartment. He said he had a girlfriend, but we never actually saw any woman ever at the apartment when me and my friends were there. He had a lot of weird-looking camera equipment and developed his own film. Most importantly, he was a computer science teacher when the field was pretty brand new, and he had built a home computer from scratch. My friends and I thought he was the coolest guy we ever met. He had all kinds of games on his computer, and he allowed any of the young guys in the neighborhood to pop by and play on his computer. He also had all kinds of weird gadgets and experiments. He had one of those Jacob Ladder lightning arc gadgets you'd see in those old horror movies. He always seemed to have some new gadget he was making. It wasn't long before we were going over this teacher's house to play on the computers or see his weird gadgets all the time. Sometimes, he'd get very physical and grab one of us from behind and bear hug us when he was greeting us. Or he'd stand uncomfortably close to us. After a few months, we were getting suspicious about this guy, and he didn't seem to have any family or friends. Sometimes, when there were a lot of kids at his apartment, and he was distracted, we would snoop around and look in his cabinets and things like that. We'd find weird items like a pair of brass knuckles, handcuffs, and some beads that looked like they were supposed to be white, but they had dried up brown stuff on them. And the door to his bedroom was always locked. One day, when there was a lot of kids there, he put on some music. He always puts on music, but this time it wasn't top 40 music like he usually would put on. It was like folk music of some kind. My buddy and I were already suspicious at this point, and while everyone was having fun on the computer or hanging with the teacher, we listened to the lyrics of the music. It was hard to make out the lyrics over all the raised voices in the room, but it became very clear that the lyrics was about homosexuality. My buddy and I freaked out, as it hit us at the same time that this guy might like kids in a way that wasn't right. We quickly made an excuse to leave and went home and told our parents of our suspicions. My father freaked out and told us never to go over that guy's place again. We also put the word out on the street, and pretty quickly everyone became weary of this guy. However, one of my friends from our block, Danny, he thought we were all wrong, and he kept going to see this teacher. One day, Danny stopped coming to school, and the rumor was that something bad happened to him by that guy with the computers. Danny moved away, and not long after, so did the teacher. I can't tell you how lucky me and my buddies felt to have stopped going to that guy's house before something happened to us. Years later, when I was in my early 20s, I took a course at the university on computer programming. One night, my buddy and I were in a computer lab, and we were testing out a new program I wrote. When who walks into the lab? That old guy. This time, both my buddy and I stood up and yelled at that guy to get away from us. He quickly left, and other people in the lab asked what was going on. We told him what happened years ago. I don't know if someone reported him, but we never saw him at the university again after that. This story happened to me on my first day of high school. I remember walking down my street in the morning toward the bus stop. There were a few other kids that stood next to me talking. There was also a man who definitely didn't belong at a high school bus stop. He was tall, had a shaved head, a mustache, and a white tank top on. I thought he looked weird and out of place, but I really didn't give it a second thought. My first day of high school actually went fine. It was on the way home where it all went wrong. I got on the school bus, and as I was walking to find my seat, I saw the same man from this morning sat on the back of the bus. This time, he was staring right at me. I didn't know then, and I still don't know now, how this guy even got on the bus in the first place. The house I lived in was one of the last stops, so by the time my stop arrived, most of the kids had gotten off the bus, and the bus was empty. I could just feel that guy staring at me the whole bus ride home, though I didn't dare to look behind me and check. When my stop finally arrived, I got off and I started walking. And of course that creepy man got off and started following me. I started walking faster. And as I did, the man got faster. And that continued right down my street. The faster I walked, the faster he would. It got to the point where I needed to start running. Thankfully, my house was close by. I ran by my house and slammed the door shut, and I looked through the kitchen window to see if the man was still chasing me. He was walking past my house like nothing ever happened, while staring at me. Later that night, I was upstairs in my bedroom when someone knocked at the door, the downstairs door. The next thing I heard was my mom calling me downstairs. When I get there, my mom is looking confused and checking around outside. I say to her, "Yeah, Mom?" She said, "That's weird. There was a man just here asking to speak to you." I asked what he looked like, and she described the same man who chased me home earlier that day. I told my mom about what happened, and how I was pretty sure it was the same guy who knocked at the door. My mother told the police and our school, and actually, this wasn't the first time they have heard reports of this. From what I know, he was never caught. Who knows what he could be doing right now? Just be careful. This happened to me about 7 years ago. I worked at KFC through high school and college. I went to college really close to where I grew up, so staying at the same work location was very easy for me. One day I went to work at 4:30 and had to work the drive through half of my shift due to someone calling off. It seemed like a regular day until we were getting ready to close. At around 10:50 p.m., this guy walked in and stood by the front register. He looked weird, as if he just came from a costume party. I let him know that when he's ready to order, just tell me, as I'm cleaning due to us closing in 10 minutes. He told me that he wasn't ordering and wanted to know what time we closed. I told him 11 p.m. and he left. I'd noticed that he got inside a van that has been sitting in the parking lot for hours. I thought it was weird but continued to clean up. There were a few of us still on shift. Again, everything seemed regular that night. I grabbed the trash and went outside toward the dumpster. As I approached the dumpster, I noticed someone trying to hide in the shadows behind the dumpster. I stopped immediately, and I tried to squint in order to get a better look. Then whoever that was behind the dumpster moved back so I wouldn't be able to see their shoes anymore. But they didn't know I already saw them. I turned around immediately and went back inside. I told my manager, he went to the door with one of my coworkers to get a better look. They couldn't see anyone, so they went outside to check it out and left me inside by myself. I felt safe while they were outside. I went to the cash register at the drive-thru to cash out for the night. Then on my left, I swear I saw the man from earlier in the window. He had a blank look on his face, then he started hitting the window with a dead raccoon trying to get in while yelling my name. I ran to the front door as my manager and coworker were walking back in. I frantically told them what happened, and my manager ran back outside to the window while my coworker stayed with me and called the police. the guy left before my manager was able to get him. The cameras outside got the license plate, but it didn't match the description of the van, and the plates were registered to a woman. This guy was never found, and I am forever worried that he will come back for me. Growing up, I lived in the middle of the woods. No neighbors for about a mile on each side. And we owned 60 acres of forest and a swamp after that. So I basically lived in the middle of nowhere. One summer when I was about 14, I was out in the middle of the woods playing with my dog. When I kept feeling something hit my elbow. I'd go to throw Max's ball and the bump would make me throw it straight up in the air. Assuming it was just me bumping it on the trees or something, I just ignored it. After the fourth or fifth time of it happening, I thought, well, this sucks. I'll just go home. Walking back, I felt uneasy, but I knew it was just me freaking myself out because we were alone. About an hour later, Max and I are at home on the couch when the garage door opens and he starts barking. I hop up to, you know, go let my mom and dad in, even though they were home really early. I peered through the peephole and saw the door was still shut and no one was in the garage. Quieting Max down, I opened the door slowly and I called out for my dad. Nothing. No response at all. So I got out to check the door and it's still locked. Okay, sure. Weird, but oh well. Max heard it too, so at least I know I'm not going crazy. About 20 minutes later, I hear the door open again, and this time Max starts growling like crazy. I quiet him down again and just assume it's the wind or something making noise, even though by this point my heart is racing. I hear footsteps come up the stairs and think, oh geez, Dad really is home this time. And I hop up and run to the door. It starts to jiggle, so I run faster to let him in. I peek through the hole and even though my hand is loosely around the jiggling handle, there's no one on the other side of the door. Terrified, I go hide on the couch with all the lights on, but Max is still growling. About an hour after that, I start to feel a little better even though I'm still terrified, and then I hear the door handle jiggle again. This time it was Max jiggling it. He needed to go outside and the only way outside is through the garage. Fantastic. I literally sprint with him to the kennel, and as I'm standing in there, I decide to ask this thing questions to make myself feel better because I knew it wouldn't answer me. Thinking about what to ask, my eyes are drawn to the huge, heavy oak door on the kennel. It was always open because it was too heavy for me to move easily. So I said out loud, "Okay, ghost, if you're really here, shut this heavy door." Then nothing. A minute goes by, nothing. Max is still sniffing around. I turn around and yell at him to hurry up, and then from behind me I hear click. I whipped around and saw the giant door had swung shut and latched. Okay, clearly it was just the wind. It wasn't really windy, but it was the wind, for sure, it had to be. So I proceed. "Okay, ghost, that was the wind. If you're really real, you'll open the massive door back up." Then nothing. I relax a bit and then squat down with my head on my knees, reminiscing about how lame I just was being scared when I hear click, clack. The door was now wide open. Max was done, so we booked it back into the house, locking every door in the house. For the next 4 hours, I would hear the footsteps on the stairs and the door handle jiggling every few minutes, until finally, around 11 p.m., my dad walks and yells at me for wasting electricity. I never told him or my mom about it until about 4 months later, when my dad came in from hunting after dark. He looked shaken, and I asked him what was wrong.
He said he aimed at two deer but missed both completely because it felt as if something was hitting his elbow and making him shoot way above the deer. That's when I told him everything. My name is Stan. I'm 17 years old, and this story happened about 4 years ago. The school I went to was in a very rural area in my village. My friend Peter went to the same school, but I lived further away. His mom would always drop him off near my house, and we would always walk to school together. On our way to school, we would always pass some farms, and one of them had this really old, creepy house that was abandoned for years. One day, me and Peter said we should check it out and see what's in there, basically. We couldn't go after school because, like I said, Peter lived further away, and his mom needed to get him home. This was also during the winter, so it got dark sooner. So myself and Peter, we came up with the plan that Peter would have a sleepover around my house. And when my parents were asleep, we would sneak out and explore the abandoned farmhouse. It was Friday, and the past few days have been snowing. After school, Peter came to my house. We spent the evening playing video games and looking up creepy videos on the internet, anxiously waiting to sneak out. 1 a.m. rolled around, and we put our coats on and snuck out my bedroom window, which is ground level. We had one flashlight between the both of us, which Peter managed to sneak out of his dad's garage. We walked through the farm fields and made it to the house. Naturally, the first thing we did was try to open the front door, but it was locked. We looked around at a few of the windows, and one of them was smashed open. So we used this as our entrance. Surprisingly, the place seemed rather untouched for how long it had been rumored to be abandoned. It was just covered in dust and had a really strong smell. Not bad necessarily, but it did smell odd. I shone my flashlight to the top of the stairs. I couldn't see anything, but it seemed really eerie up there. And then I heard wood creaking. It kind of sounded like slow footsteps, but I wasn't certain. Peter then said, "We should check upstairs." I told him I'm not going up there. There's probably some maniac up there waiting to kill us. The next thing that happened was the phone rang. One of those really old phones made myself and Peter jump out of our skin. At that time, I didn't think about it, but I thought it was weird of how someone was calling this house and it was abandoned. I picked it up, and I said in a nervous voice, hello? For a second there wasn't any response, and then a man spoke on the other end saying, "I'm not a maniac. Why don't you come upstairs and see for yourself?" At that point, loud, heavy footsteps ran across the upstairs room and toward the top of the stairs. Peter and I ran out the farmhouse as fast as we could. We ran out down to the farm. I glanced back to see if there was someone chasing us, but there wasn't. So I told Peter to slow down so we could catch our breath for a second. After taking a better look at the house, one of the upstairs lights was on, and there was a dark figure standing at the window, watching us. I didn't know what to think, and honestly, I was terrified. The light then turned out, and the both of us made our way back to my house. We managed to sneak back inside without making my parents wake up. Peter didn't say much. I think he was too creeped out as to what just happened. And to be honest, I didn't feel like talking either. I was actually quite paranoid that, I don't know, that guy was going to follow us to my house. Thankfully, at least to what I know of, we weren't followed. From that night on, every time me and Peter walk to school, we look at that creepy farmhouse. We can't help but feel someone's looking back at us.
Just moved into a tiny town that was literally in the middle of nowhere and had less than 100 people in the total population. I was about 7 at the time, and I had overheard my parents talking about a dog that kept barking all night that kept them up.
I wanted to help them, so I went out looking for neighbors with dogs, just to ask them if they could maybe keep their dogs from barking all night. So this particular town had a bad track record of houses catching on fire. So there are a lot of old half-burned houses just sitting there. This particular incident happened with one of these ruined houses. As I'm walking, I hear someone call out to me, and I turn to see a very beautifully kept lawn in front of a nice white two-story house. There's a nice old couple sitting in lawn chairs out in front, and the woman is calling me over. I walk over to the fence. The woman asks me what I'm doing walking around here by myself. I tell them about the dog and ask if they know about it. The woman says that it's her dog and she'll try to keep the dog down, and then offers me a full-size Snickers, and I took it. Feeling like I accomplished my goal, I went home. At that time, I really wanted to eat the Snickers, but it had melted on my walk back home, so I put it in the freezer to chill. Then my friend comes over, and we head over to her house, and I forgot about the candy. Wondering how the ruined houses fit into this? Well, when I return home from my friend's house, I tell my mom about the nice couple, and they would keep their dog quiet. I tell her where the house was, and she gets really confused. What do you mean? There isn't a house there. I would have shown the candy bar as evidence, but I had totally forgot about it. After some back and forth, we agree to go on a walk tomorrow in the daytime, so I can show her which house I mean. Next day, we walk down to where the house was, and there was no house. The well-kept lawn was just overgrown weeds, and the house was just nothing but a pile of rubble. Only the fence still remained. I ran home to show her the candy that I had just remembered about, and that was gone too. I still get chills when I pass by that vacant lot to this day, and right now, I'm 20 years old. It was Christmas and I was a freshman in high school. My family has been split up for some time, so normally, we trade off Christmas Day and Christmas Eve each year. And this year, I had come home early from my grandparents' Christmas party, while everyone else was at my aunt and uncle's celebrating another party. When I was dropped off, my cousins offered to stay with me for a few hours, but I declined. I thought I could watch some of my new DVDs and get some alone time in this house, which is a rarity. I had noticed an unfamiliar car parked on the street, but didn't think anything of it, considering it was Christmas Eve. Probably a neighbor's relative or something. I hadn't been home for more than 15 minutes when there was a knock at the door. I unlocked the door and opened it only a crack to see a man standing there. Dark hair, glasses, slightly overweight and dressed casually. He didn't look like much of a threat, but my stomach dropped. He asked, "I was wondering about the car outside. Is it for sale?" I told him, "I don't think so. Is there someone here I can talk to about it?" I said, quite stupidly, "No, you can come back another time." And I shut the door and turned the lock as fast as I could. He reached for the door handle immediately and started pounding on the door. I heard a string of profanities and a pounding stopped. Terrified, I was crawling on the floor to the phone, hoping he wouldn't be able to see me through one of the windows. Then I heard the noises. Our house has an open garage door, and it led through to the laundry room, where the door lock was broken and no one had bothered to fix it. Just then I heard a man yell and I saw the man through the window run to his car and drive off. My uncle had gotten him, just in time, and he scared him away. Who knows what would have happened if he hadn't made it home in time. Sadly, we didn't get the plate number, and nothing ever came of it. But I'll never be home alone again on the holidays. We used to have this neighbor. His name was George. He was about 50 years old at the time. He lived alone, and I swear all he used to do was just stare out his window, giving us dirty looks.
Whenever kids would knock on his door asking for their ball back, he would always curse at them and make a big fuss about it. Sometimes, he wouldn't even give the ball back until a week later, when he would just puncture the ball and it would be flat and then he'll just throw him over the fence. He was a moody old guy. But every second weekend of the month, he would go fishing for 2 days. I was 15 at the time of this story. And one day, myself and my friend, we came up with an idea to sneak into George's house. Because as dumb teenagers, we thought it would be hilarious. So that following weekend, George left for his weekend fishing trip. And that same night, me and my friend, who was sleeping at my house at the time, we snuck out late and went to check George's creepy house. I always knew he left a spare key under his plant pot, so getting inside was easy. I know this is breaking and entering, but what we discovered in the house made me thankful that my friend and I came up with this dumb idea. We looked around George's house. Most of the rooms were pretty normal as far as normal goes. My friend went off and looked around the other rooms while I went into his office. There was a computer there. I moved the mouse around and clicked on the login. Funny enough, he didn't even have a password. I looked around his PC desktop at what applications he had. Pretty basic stuff, but I noticed a file called Favorite Photos. I clicked on it and saw hundreds and hundreds of inappropriate pictures of children in our neighborhood. I was thinking to myself, what the hell is this? Just as I was looking at this sick stuff, I could hear my friend loudly whispering to me from another room saying I need to look at something right now. I left the computer desk and went to have a look. My friend found a duffel bag with duct tape, sleeping pills, candy, a long piece of rope, crowbar, and a loaded gun. We were both in complete shock. I also told him, and I showed him what I found on his computer. We both were scared as hell, and it wasn't funny anymore. We put everything back the way we found it and snuck out back to my house. Me and my friend didn't know who to call, so we didn't really want to call the police because we would have gotten in trouble for breaking in. We chose not to say anything to anyone until this story. It was prom night, in the place where the prom was being held in a big lodge in the middle of the countryside. The prom was going pretty well. I snuck outside to have a cigarette. I stood outside around the back of the building. I lit my cigarette and enjoyed the view of the countryside. As I was looking around, I noticed something in the distance out in the field. It was a figure walking toward the lodge. I kept my eye on the figure as I was smoking. At some point, the figure must have noticed me because it stopped. Then it started running toward me full speed. Getting closer and closer, I could see it was a man, a crazy dude sprinting really fast with long gray hair, carrying what looked like a hatchet. The guy seemed to be smiling, but angry at the same time. I dropped my cigarette and I turned around to go back inside, but the door was shut behind me as it was a fire exit and only opened one way. I started banging on the door, screaming for someone to let me in. It was too late to run around the front of the lodge. The insane man was too close, so running wasn't an option. I kept banging on the doors, but I was thinking I wasn't going to be heard as the music was playing loudly. And I was thinking I was about to die. Just before the man got close, the fire escape door opened with my friend asking what's going on. I quickly pushed her back and I scrambled inside. I also slammed the door shut right behind me. As soon as the door closed, I pressed my ear against it and I tried to listen to see if the man was still there. All I heard was heavy breathing. Then I heard footsteps walking away on the stones. I told my friend about what I just saw, but she didn't believe me. She said it must have been one of the guys playing a prank on me, but I know what I saw. I couldn't enjoy the rest of the prom after this, knowing There was a crazy man out there. Luckily, nothing happened the rest of the night, but I always worried about whoever that man was. He saw my face. And if he saw me again, what will happen? When I was 17, I didn't have a driver's license. Most of the time I walked or hitchhiked. There was this one night. There weren't that many cars on the road, and it was very cold. And this man pulled over. When the guy pulled over, I took a good look at the guy and figured I could take him if he tried anything. He was on the slender side and had a strange frailness about him, even though he looked healthy enough. I got into the car after we agreed on the destination. We exchanged names and I warmed my fingers up in front of the heating vent. He spoke quietly, asking a few questions along the lines of, was I local and how did I like living there? He said he only been here for a few months, but found it beautiful and hoped he could find happiness there. That comment struck me as a little odd, but I brushed it off. It began to snow and the road quickly got slippery. So he slowed and he kept his eyes straight out the windshield, driving silently. I was okay with that, as small talk was never my forte. About 10 minutes later, I noticed the car near the intersection we were approaching seemed to be sliding, so I said, "Watch out." He immediately hit the gas, shooting through the intersection and burst out with, "Don't ever scream at me." Needless to say, I was taken aback. I said, "Look, this is close enough. Just pull over here and I can get there." He didn't seem to hear me. So I said, "Richard, did you hear me? I said, you can pull over here and let me out." But no response. He just stared straight ahead, driving faster now than he did when it started snowing. To say I was scared doesn't seem to cover the depth of the fear that began to rise in me. I didn't know if I should stay quiet or speak, but I was damn sure not going to yell after his outburst. After about a mile, he began to mumble under his breath. I couldn't quite make out what he was saying, but I assumed he was speaking to me. So I said, "What did you say? I couldn't hear you." He began to speak quietly and rapidly, saying things like, "You're always yelling at me. I've told you time and time again, do not yell at me. I don't appreciate it. No, you don't listen. You don't listen." And I was just sitting there looking at him. I was at a complete loss. I didn't know what to say in response or if I should say anything at all. I contemplated just jumping out of the car, but nixed that idea when I realized the door lock was missing. There was just a silver-lined hole where it should have been. I started to cry and debate with myself about causing an accident by grabbing the wheel and hoping for the best. When he suddenly looked at me for the first time since I had gotten in the car, he blinked several times rapidly, then slowed the car, pulling into a gas station. I waited to see if he unlocked the doors, not wanting to say anything to set him off again. After a minute or two, he quietly said, "I think I better let you out of here." And he hit the button to the door locks, and he opened the door. I wasn't about to hesitate, so I jumped out of the car as if I were on fire. I was about to turn and walk into the gas station when he called my name. He looked so damn sad, and I hesitated. He apologized, said he was sorry if he had frightened me, that he never would have harmed me. And he asked if I'd be able to get home okay. I said I would and closed the door. He began to pull out of the gas station, but stopped suddenly. He just sat there for a couple of moments, his head down. I froze, wondering what the hell was up, and was about to run into the gas station, but he opened his window and yelled at me, waving something in his hand, my hat. I left it on his seat. I slowly approached the side of his car, and he handed it to me, apologizing again.
I didn't know what else to say, so I just said, thanks. I watched as he drove off, making sure he was out of sight before moving on so he wouldn't know which direction I was heading. As I walked, I went to put my hat back on, and a piece of paper fell out of it. Folded into a paper was a $100 bill. The paper said, I'm sorry. Please take a cab and don't hitchhike anymore tonight. I didn't. In fact, it was the last time I ever hitchhiked in my life. Will never, ever do that again.
One day, I got a call from a few friends of mine about going to the mall. It was a stressful week at work, so I thought some retail therapy would definitely help. We ended up shopping for a few hours, so we decided that hitting the food court would be the spot. I gave the girls my order, and I told them I would come back and find them as I needed them after I used the restroom. The restrooms are at the end of the large and wide corridor. They were your typical mall type with lots of stalls. Anyway, so I sat down to use the bathroom, and I could see from the gap on the floor between the wall of the stall and the floor, lots of movement from someone's shadow. I wasn't sure if they were getting changed or not, so I didn't pay attention at first, but it felt like the shadow was coming from above at some points. You know, as if the light above was being obstructed by something. After maybe the third time, I decided to look up and I could see a phone and parts of a guy's arm leaning over. Someone was taking photos of me. I instantly shouted out, "What are you doing, you pervert?" And in a moment of sheer shock and disbelief, this all very quickly turned into fear as I got up and leaped out of the stall and was greeted by an empty bathroom. Not one person was in sight, and from the quick glance of the mirrors opposite, there was only one stall shut. And it was the one next to me. I ran for the restroom exit, but it was locked. Luckily, it had a twist lock, and I could turn it as I did. I heard the stall open from behind me. I got out immediately and turned as I exited and noticed a sign on the door saying, "Closed for maintenance." This sign was not here when I went in. I screamed some more, shouting to get anyone's attention as I ran down the corridor toward the food hall, and had obviously caught the attention of a few people. A group of three guys stopped me and clearly could see the panic in my eyes. They asked me questions and I explained. Two guys ran toward the ladies' restroom and one to find security. Security arrived within seconds. After a while, a rather large crowd had gathered due to the commotion, and although I was in the comfort of my friends, security, and now the police, I never felt so alone. Security and police, nor two guys found anyone. There was a few staff only, and fire exit doors opened down the corridor, so plenty of escape routes for whoever this guy was. I gave my statements down at the station later that day once my parents showed up. The police said they had security tapes from the cameras that point down the corridor and will keep us updated with any news. Hopefully, they find this guy. When I was 15, my mother went out shopping and left me in charge of the house. It was starting to get dark and I realized my little brother was nowhere to be found. I asked my sister if she knew where he was and she said he had gone to the park around the corner to kick his soccer ball around. I told her to watch the house while I was gone and ran off to the direction of the park. When I got there, I was surprised to find the park completely empty. I called out my brother's name, but there was no answer. I started to get worried, and all of a sudden I heard a faint muffled noise coming from my left. I turned just in time to see a tall figure disappearing behind a large fence. I sprinted as fast as I could, and when I came around to the other side of the fence, I saw something that almost made me choke in horror. My little brother was being dragged down the alleyway by a tall man. I flew into a rage and tears of anger streamed down my face. I ran at him and he must have heard me coming because he turned around to face me and he dropped my younger brother.
The tall man tried to grab me, but I was running at him so fast that when I slammed into him, it knocked him off his feet. He swore and tried to get back up, but I just started stomping on his face. Without stopping to ask questions, I picked my brother up and ran as fast as I could back to our house. By this time, it was pitch black outside and my mother was home. She was frantic with worry, and when she saw the look on our face, she realized that something bad had happened. As I explained, my brother and I started crying, and my mom gave us both the biggest hug ever, and she cried with us. Eventually, the police were called, but this guy was never found.
How much I love you, baby. How much I wanna be.